when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, welcome everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher. This is Prepping 2.0. And I am joined today by my partner in life, my husband and fellow author and fellow prepper, Glenn Tate. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Shelby.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a great episode because
it's going to be pretty funny.
I'll let you describe why it's going to be a great episode.
Well, it's going to be funny because we're going to talk about the hilarious excuses for not prepping, which is funny. And then we're going to have some listener letters in the second half of our show. So it's going to be hilarious, and then I think it's going to be heartwarming.
Yep.
So it'll be good. So right off the bat, though, we encourage people to check out our website, prepping2-0.com. You can see all the ways that you can listen to us in podcast mediums, past episodes if you've missed them. And then this is more important to me. Welcome to the new stations who are joining us.
Radio stations,
which is great. So we used to say this was a podcast. It is definitely not anymore. It's a show. It's a radio show.
And a podcast.
You can listen to us in Oregon, Idaho. Where else?
Utah. And soon to be, I'm so excited, Colorado. We're going to get some details with call letters later and all of that. By the way, all these shows you can listen to online, all the radio stations you can listen to online. This Colorado station is conservative prepper talk radio 2.0. They're doing some cool stuff. It's not just the usual stuff on radio stations. And it's kind of an important flagship station. And the fact that they've asked us to come on and we said, heck yeah, in a heartbeat, this is cool stuff. So We'll tell you more about that, but what is a cool reason to be on the radio in Colorado, Shelby?
It is really cool because it just hits all my warm, fuzzy feels because I spent the better half of the first part of my life in Colorado growing up. Even more importantly, is about half of my book series takes place in Colorado. And so if you have not listened or read my book series, A Great State, you can check it out there. And I know what I'm talking about because I've hiked, fished, skied, and enjoyed the Rocky Mountains and all that it has to offer. And when I speak to that, I speak from experience. So that's what's cool. Welcome, Colorado listeners. If you aren't already listening, you will be soon. So the next part that we like to talk about at the beginning of our shows, and you can see this again on our website, there's a link for the top 100 things that will disappear in a collapse, research and experiences based on people who experienced the Bosnian collapse. We are number 20. Number 20 is really interesting to me, and I want to spend probably a little bit more time on it than we normally do on this. It is washing machines, specifically laundry supplies for manual use. Washboards, plungers, and then the other cool thing, again, you have to go look at this link. They have compact washer machines that are not electric.
And are not ridiculously expensive.
Right. So what I encourage you to do, you have to drill down a little bit. Go to our website. Go to the link for the top 100 things. Go to number 20, and you will see a link there. Compact washing machines that will take you to Amazon. This small little tub that is hand cranked that will wash your clothes. And it's about $50-some. And there's about 1,200 reviews, all 4 stars and above. Kind of interesting, and especially in a grid down situation, incredibly handy. That's one thing you don't hear talked about. I just assumed that when the grid down situation comes, I would just be scrubbing clothes in a bathtub or in a large sink or utility sink with water that I hauled in. Here's what's cool. Not needed anymore. It's kind of ingenious.
Well, you know, people forget about this aspect of their daily lives that they won't have when there's no electricity and probably flowing water. And that's why we do this list of top 100 things. It forces you to think about things you wouldn't have thought of. But when you're sitting in Sarajevo evading sniper fire and there are no supplies, like the reason this list exists was those sorts of things, makes you think about it. You know, when I think about, let's say you do the ultimate awesome peacetime prepping thing. You spend weekend in, say, my case, out training with the team. Let's say maybe in other people's cases, maybe your case, you're out gardening and you're butchering chickens and you're vacuum sealing food. And then what do? At the end of this weekend, you wash your clothes in your washing machine in your house, and you kind of don't even think, oh, geez, I'm going to get dirty out in the woods training. I'm going to get dirty butchering chickens, for goodness sakes, right? And you are. And if you don't have, especially with undergarments, hygiene and socks, if you don't have hygiene going on, you're going to take yourself out of this fight. You're going to become a liability because you can't, you know, you're not healthy, and maybe if with socks you can't walk around. So you went to all this trouble, you did all this prepping, you spent all this time and all this money, and you didn't have a way of washing your socks, and then you get jungle rot or foot rot, which is a real thing, and it doesn't only happen in jungles. And then you are hobbled up and you are not effective, and your life expectancy just shortened significantly, all because you didn't think of something as simple as a $50 hand crank washing machine that if you get it on Amazon, it comes to your door. By the way, we don't make any money. Click on whatever link you want. You know what I mean? And that's the beauty of this show, is that we are able to come up with things, not because we're brilliant, but because there's a list out there of stuff to get people to think about. So yeah, washing machines. Who'd have thunk it?
Yep, it's kind of cool. The other thing I just want to say, kind of a little bit of a side note, when you look at the reviews here, what's really cool is you see people who are already live in kind of a tiny house or off the grid situation that put in a really, you know, meaningful review. That whole tiny house movement, that and that whole RV movement, there are some really cool supplies and items that are really good for us preppers. So if you ever see any lists or articles or news feedy sorts of things, check it out, because those are, you might see some things in there. I'm like, yep, washing machines. I get it. That'd be cool.
Well, one of the things about prepping 2.0 we always talk about, the reason it's the 2.0 is that, say, a lot of us started prepping, you know, 10 or so years ago. There are all kinds of new products and technologies that are out now or are cheap and used to be expensive. By the way, these hand crank washing machines I looked at like 7 years ago, it was about $800. I don't know if it's the same thing. I don't know much about it. But I remember thinking, yeah, that ain't happening. And so one of the things about this next stage of prepping 2.0, is letting folks know about new products and new technologies that are out here. Perfect example, washing machines. Not as sexy as the latest generation of inexpensive night vision for shooting marauders, but guess what? After you shoot marauders, you're probably going to have blood all over you. You're probably going to need to wash your clothes. See how they work hand in hand?
Very cool. So the next thing we're going to talk about, this one's on you. Go for it, Glenn.
Well, one of the lines in my books, 299 Days books, is I miss America. And the good guys go out and start spray painting that in the occupied territories and occupied areas. And it tells the population that they're active and that they're strong and the authorities can't control them. But what it really tells people is it shares something that they're feeling. We all feel this. If you're in the prepping movement, you miss America because it didn't used to be this way and it used to be a lot better. It's a very political, profound, it's an emotional, yes, emotions are not bad. It is an emotional reaction people have when they see I miss America. And one of, you know, on a shirt or something like that, one of the things we do on this show now recently has been the I miss America moment of the week. And this is something that comes up during the week. You and I see and we say, oh my goodness, you know, this really makes me miss America. And the I miss America moment of the week this week is that Starbucks is now installing needle drop boxes, sharp boxes, in all of its restrooms. Because why? Is this because there are the occasional people with type 1 diabetes that need to give themselves an insulin injection? Nope, that's not what it's for. It's about deranged, lunatic, homeless people who seem to flock to Starbucks. And the thing that makes me miss America about this is that Starbucks cannot simply say, hey, deranged, crazy, criminal, homeless people, please don't come to our store, because that's unthinkable. You know,
you're going to offend somebody, and somebody's going to get a lawyer and sue, and the snowflake culture of our world can't handle being told no.
Exactly. And Starbucks, yeah, can't say no to these people. And here's the other thing. There are so many voluntarily homeless people, and yes, there are exceptions to this rule, like there are to every generalization we make on this show or anywhere in life when you generalize there are exceptions. And there's so many people that have just decided, younger people, quite honestly, who've decided that working is just not for them, it's too hard, there's too much stress, why do that? I'm just going to be urban camping, as they call it. This is a big problem, you know, cities on the West Coast. I'm sure wherever folks are listening now, it's probably a big problem where they are too. And they've just decided to be just completely out of control degenerates. Golly, I sound like my grandpa. But to be completely out of control degenerates, apparently, from what I've seen from the Starbucks in my former town of Olympia, Washington, they apparently congregate there. And so it's just a symbol of all kinds of things to miss about America. Well, speaking of I Miss America, that reminds me of some stuff we have in the merch shack.
What's in the merch shack?
I love our merch shack. Great place to find it. It's many of you have indicated, where is it? Go to our websites, 299days.com or agreatstate.com. Those are our author pages, and both of them have a shop link. Just click on the link. It'll take you to the same space, same spot, and that is where you can find merchandise that we have put together. I'm going to tell you, it's not a catalog. It's a handful of things that have the I Miss America logo on it. The highlight I want to give to you this week is t-shirts. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, I have got it restocked with updated sizes and updated more, because right now there's several sizes.
Because people love them. They sell like crazy.
We sell out of them, and here's the thing, trying to keep up with that. So hopefully when you're listening to this, it is either updated or within seconds about ready to be. But here's what I think is heartwarming on this. You and I have had some amazing conversations with people when we're just walking around wearing our t-shirts. And I will say this, we don't do it all the time because we're professionals and we have to go to work every day. But when we do, whether we go to an event or something like that, inevitably we go to a restaurant, we go to a coffee shop, not necessarily a Starbucks, and we have that person that starts up, what does your t-shirt mean? And we end up having an amazing conversation and hear people's stories and hear the things they miss about America, and they become good friends, honestly.
No, it's a great conversation starter. So anyway, yeah, new t-shirts. We've got some new sizes, and check it out in the merch shack, 299days.com, the shopping tab, shop. And there it is. Well, Shelby, why don't you introduce our first segment topic, which is hilarious excuses for not prepping.
So this is awesome. So we got this idea from one of our fellow podcasters actually out there, and you can look him up on social media. He has a very huge social media presence. It's Brian Duff over at Mind for Survival. Very solid guy in the prepping movement and being prepared. And he did a post a few weeks ago. He has a closed group, so you may have to ask to enter it. But he put out there on April 22nd this question. Most hilarious excuses you've heard for not prepping. And it's hilarious what people have said. So we wanted to just talk about these because we've all heard them. We've all been told that we're crazy for prepping. And so that's what we're going to talk about today for probably a good part of this segment, because this is going to be funny. The one that, and I think this is where the nexus for this really came from. If you go back to our episode 7, back in the beginning embryonic stages of this show, it was what, 2 months ago?
Yeah, 2 months ago. back when
money was invented. I don't know, whatever. But there was we had almost a half, if not a whole show on, I'm going to come to your house. So that's where this came from. And sure enough, number 2 that I'm seeing that somebody said on this, I'll come to your house.
As a hilarious excuse not to prep. They'll just come to your house. How do we feel about that?
We don't feel very good about that at all. Because it's the same. It's just like someone, they're stealing from you. You have worked so hard for the things that you have, that you've prepped for, and they just come and show up and say, hey, I want free stuff. It doesn't feel good.
And I tell the story in episode 7, and I'll tell it again because it's so common for people out there that are listening. They've had this happen too. A person that we know who is kind of a conservative, kind of gets that stuff's falling apart, did this whole thing with me, like, I'll just come to your house. And I got really mad. And I said, at the time, it was football season, and I was following on Facebook a former friend of mine, I might add, for a bunch of other reasons. And you know, he's like watching football, and he's spent Saturday, you know, at a wine bar drinking wine with his wife and having a good time. I spent that weekend prepping, vacuum sealing stuff, organizing stuff, working out at the cabin, doing all this stuff. Having come off of that weekend, that Monday morning, he does this whole, I'll just come to your house. And I thought to myself, I'm not drinking wine. I'm not watching football. What makes you think you can just have all this stuff? Not just stuff in general, stuff that in a collapse is incredibly valuable. Life and death matter now. We're not talking like, you know, extra Monopoly like game pieces from McDonald's, something that has no value, right? What makes you think, and you got to listen to episode 7. We don't normally say you got to listen to a past episode, but we articulate it well. We had a whole hour to do it. But this whole I'm coming to your house thing is a hilarious thing. It's a crutch for people. It's a way for them not only to not do stuff, which is probably their main reason, right? But it's a way for them to explain in their minds. They have this dilemma in their minds. They know that they need to prep. They know stuff, bad stuff's coming. But they're too lazy or they're scared. They don't see the other thing about this guy. He didn't want to be the one, because his wife thought he was a lunatic for even thinking bad things could happen. He didn't want to get in constant arguments with his wife. He wanted to have marital bliss. I wasn't having marital bliss back in my previous
marriage. And not only
that,
he knew you were not having marital bliss over this issue, but so he's going to come to your house.
Right. And so he's just fine with that. So, you know, and there's, again, excuses not to prep. He knows he needs to prep. He's not going to do it. And he thinks he's just going to come to my place. That conversation, by the way, with him essentially ended. I tell the story better in episode 7, but the short version is with me saying, don't make me kill you in front of your family. I don't want them to see that. And that's a stark, horrible thing that I don't say lightly, but that's how that conversation ended. And I humbly suggest to folks listening, I think Shelby would agree with me, you have to, in your mind, get ready to throw down that gauntlet and say, hope this never happens, but if you think you're going to leech off of me when there's no food and there's no law and order, you think you're going to leech off of me, I will shoot you.
Well, and again, please, I don't want to spend all the time on this one, but go back and listen to the episode, because he pressed it. He comes back again. I'll just come to your place. No, you won't. No, really, I'm going to come to your place. No, you won't. I'll come to your door then. What are you going to do? I mean, he pressed it a little bit. So it's kind of like, you know what? Don't know what to tell you, but you're the one asking for it. So, and I also think, not just this person, but people who say that it is the ultimate laziness. They're in their mind, I've already prepped because I'm going to his house. Check, the box is checked. I'm prepped. I'm going to this person's house. It is the ultimate selfishness and ultimate laziness. As funny as it is and all of that, and we can joke about it today, but it is not, it's not cool. Because you really are putting other, well, and if you talk to any preppers, I know people out there saying, you're not going to steal food out of my kid's mouth. I mean, if you want to get a prepper mad, say that to him. Just try it sometime, obviously.
Another difference between prepping 1.0, in my opinion, and prepping 2.0 is prepping 1.0, at least me, speaking from personal experience, 10 years ago, I would have considered the possibility of taking in all these people because I hadn't had time to think about it. And I hadn't really prepped. I hadn't really thought about what is necessary to actually make it through what's coming. So in my mind, yeah, I mean, a few extra people and it's no big deal. And now prepping 2.0, even with people who at the time were close friends, now I can say, you're not coming to my place. I'm glad you brought up the fact that he kept pressing. I don't want people out there to think that I just jumped straight to the I'm going to shoot you solution, because that's really a terrible, awful thing. He kept pressing and pressing until finally he forced me to say that, which, again, was rude on his part.
Yes. Very presumptive and very lazy. So, yeah. So, that's moving on to the ex-friend. And, yeah.
Yeah. So,
What's another one of your favorites?
And by the way, this thing about I'm coming to your house will be a constant comment throughout the hilarious excuses people have heard about not prepping. So we won't repeat ourselves, but we'll tell you what they say and how they phrase how their friends tell them they're coming to their house. That's funny. Another topic is it's never going to happen. Oh, oh, it's never going to happen, so that's why you're not going to prep. Well, Shelby, what do you think about
that? What do I think about that? Well, tell that to the people who live in the northern great states who just went through a couple months of 40 degrees below zero. That's a little bit of a collapse feeling right there. Talk to those people who survived Hurricane Katrina and are still living it to this day, living the after. There's parts of where Hurricane Sandy hit that are look like the hurricane hit just last week. The collapses already happened. So to say that it won't happen, you're deluding yourself and you're lying to yourself. Natural disasters happen all the time. Here's another one. The Paradise, California, that town was completely burned off the map from wildfires just a few months ago. That's a collapse. That's everything gone and grid down. So it happens.
Yeah, and I would add to that, and we have about 3 minutes before we go into our next segment, but I would add to that the arrogance of that attitude. It's never going to happen. I love America. I am very proud to be an American. However, Americans in general, there we go generalizing again because we kind of have to, Americans have no idea what life is really like except the easy life that we have here. They have no concept of hard times. They have no concept of difficulty and not being able to just go to Walmart and get everything you need. And so when I hear people say it's never going to happen, I get mad. And another and a subset of that is people like me and people like Shelby have experienced traumatic, bad, violent things. And I don't like it when people who have never had anyone really raise their voice at them, let alone get in a fist fight, let alone be afraid for their life, start saying it's never going to happen. They do not understand that some element of society is violent and vicious and needs to be dealt with. And I don't like people who have no concept of reality telling me I'm overreacting, for example, concealed carrying, when I have had people try to kill me. And no, I'm not crazy, and no, that's not a conspiracy. You need to walk in my shoes or Shelby's shoes before you tell us that we have nothing to worry about because we've experienced things that give us something to worry about.
Well, and let me just add this, to add to what you're just saying, I know we have to take a break here in a moment. We as Americans live in pristine conditions. We can go to the local box store and pick up a whole supply of food and comforts. And we can have the instant charging and the instant cell phone and we can call anyone we want and we have access to the world through our computers. That is not the case in the majority of the world. We have creature comforts that in a moment can be gone, things that are comfortable to us now. And this is where it gets really skewed. The homeless, we were going back to this.
Exactly right.
The homeless, going back to the Starbucks thing, they have pristine conditions by the mere fact that they can walk into a Starbucks and fire up a laptop and use Wi-Fi. And shoot up drugs. Those are luxuries, including the drugs, in a lot of cultures. So we live in pristine conditions and we forget how blessed we are and that it can so quickly be gone in a poof.
Yeah, it's artificial here. All the food, all the security, all the technology, all the prosperity we have is artificial. And if you think this is the way the rest of the world is, or if you think this is the way America has always been, you're wrong. And don't tell me, ignorant person, that I'm overreacting. Well, we're going to leave this segment and we're going to be back on the other side of the break with even more of this good stuff and an amazing listener letter.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Hi, everyone. Glenn Tate here.
And Shelby Gallagher here. People always ask us whether a particular property would be good for prepping.
Well, luckily, there's someone who does this for a living, and that's Brian at Strategic Landscape Design. He's a bug-out location consultant for a new property or the one you already have.
Strategic Landscape Design shows you how to make your property productive for you now and when the collapse comes. Visit strategiclandscapedesign.com and see all the things Brian can do for you and your property. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is the second segment of episode 29. We're reading these great, hilarious excuses for not prepping. Oh my goodness, what a treasure trove this is. Thank you, Brian Duff at Mind for Survival, for putting this up on Facebook. The next comment is, the government will help us. These are all people saying these are hilarious excuses they've heard. They don't really believe this, right? I don't want you to think all these people are a bunch of dumbos or something. The government will help us, and then related to that is the next one. The government has a plan for everything. I don't need to do anything. Shelby, what are some reasons we can't count on the government?
So easy, and this is easily dismissed, folks. We know from, and I'm using natural disasters here in the United States because those are the closest thing that we've come. Natural disasters in the United States. Katrina is the big one. That's one of the disasters that really sparked a lot of us to prep. It certainly did me a little bit. Government can't do it. When there's a huge immediate need on the, grab for help in services, the government can't do it. They've said it very clearly. They've demonstrated it through these collapses. The second thing is, in just recent months, I want to say this last December, Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and when I believe the Department of Justice, I could be wrong on that one, came out with a report basically saying, we stink at preparedness and natural disaster emergency preparedness. We stink at it. We have failed in these departments. The best thing is for individuals to reach out and prepare as a small community. Isn't that what you and I have been saying, what the prepping community has been saying for years? Don't depend on government, depend on your community.
And exactly right. I find it amazing. The government is telling us clearly and repeatedly, don't count on us, right? The politicians will go and make everybody believe that, you know, if you pay taxes, then FEMA's going to be meals on wheels for you. By the way, a friend of mine was in the New York National Guard when Sandy hit, and he was telling me stories about people on Long Island, I want to say, New Yorkers, who were just nasty and angry and were demanding that FEMA, no exaggeration, deliver them a meal right now. And one of them said, she was screaming at this guy. She said, I pay my taxes. But the government tells us out loud and repeatedly that they can't do it. By the way, the federal government does this. Every once in a while, we see various state governments saying, oh, by the way, I know that Oregon's in there, and we know Oregon's a train wreck. Washington has said the same thing. So anyway, the idea that the government will help you is hilarious and stupid. I love the intro to every episode of Prepping 2.0 where, you know, says something like, the government will help us, and then we have Hillary Clinton going, ha ha, because that's obviously a silly joke. So that one we can raise and dismiss. You don't need to spend a lot of time on why that's a goofy thing. Here's something that's complicated a little bit, and that is the excuse, and I actually supplied this on the comments. This is my comment. A lot of other people agree with it. I hear this terrible excuse, God will provide. I don't need to do anything on my part. God's just going to magically make everything awesome for me. Now, I don't mean to imply for a second that I don't believe in God or I don't think God can do amazing supernatural things. In my mind, that is clearly true. It's the part I want to key on is, without any effort on my part, if you think God will provide without any effort on your part. It's that second part about effort on your part that you have wrong. God could do it, but that's not how he works typically. One in a million times he parts the Red Sea and does these sorts of things. But don't count on that. How God provides, in my opinion, is he enables us to do things. We need to put, you know, some sweat equity into it. He might provide you a job that allows you to have a little extra money to do some preps, and then it's on you to do the prep. See, it's a partnership, and he's not gonna, I think, this is my interpretation, obviously I don't know because I can't think like God because he's brilliant and I'm not. He helps those who can help themselves. By the way, that's not in the Bible, that's a summary of it, but anyway, it's a good principle from the Bible. And a lot of Christians who, by the way, are a little bit lazy, maybe they want to watch football and drink wine, right? Like the previous example we were talking about. Laziness and not wanting to think about bad stuff is not just, you know, a secular thing. And there are plenty of Christians that have that problem too. And so it's this excuse. It's the Christian crutch. The crutch Christians use is, oh, God's just going to take care of it. And folks, no. There are millions of, not millions, there are several examples from the Bible. There was, prophet said there's going to be a 7-year famine. What did the smart slash good slash prepared person do? Prepared for 7 years of famine. It's not even up for debate that God requires sweat equity on your part for you to do some of these things. And the really tragic part about Christians using this crutch of God will just provide without any effort on my part is a lot of Christians who, quite honestly, we could really do well to have around in a collapse. They would be good people to have around, and they would be helpful, and they would make sure that when we come out of this on the other end, we come out as a group of better people. They're good people, and I want them to make it through it. A lot of them are going to die. A lot of them are going to come to your house, by the way. Maybe you go to church with them, for example. They're going to say, hey, we're all Christians, right? It's all about helping each other and all this other. And they'll probably even have some Bible verses that they'll quote you about how you need to help people. You decide out there, listener, how you're going to handle that. But I'm telling you what, this part about sweat equity is how I view this. We're going to have in the next couple months, Forrest Garvin on, who wrote an amazing book about the Christian case for prepping, and this topic of God will provide so I don't need to do anything, he writes about extensively, and there's some really good thoughts that he has. So Christians out there who aren't currently doing much to prep, your crutch isn't going to work, and don't rely on it. Always rely on God, but your crutch, your human crutch, your reason for not doing stuff, yeah, that's the thing to not rely on. Shelby, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts on that are, and you and I have been all of our life, well, not for you necessarily, most of my adult life, I'll say that, Christian goers, I've studied my Bible, you've studied your Bible. God gave us humans a free will. And in that free will, he gives us choice. And that is a gift to us, but it's also a responsibility. If he were to be this, I'm going to provide for you, we would just be little robots, because then we would just sit around all day and let everything be provided for us. That is not the human condition. The human condition is that we will toil and work on this earth to provide for ourselves, and we will make choices in that. So getting down the theological line there, but that's, God has created us, and very specifically Genesis 1, to provide for ourselves. That's part of our condition that he set for us. He's very clear on that. So there you go.
Well said. Very good point. We'll do a whole show, maybe even two shows on this. Here's the next comment. This is another hilarious excuse people have heard for not prepping. I love this. I'll just take from people I don't like. What do you think about that, Shelby? That you can just, you don't need to prep because you'll just go and they're dirt bags and they're dirt bags.
You know what? This one's almost even easier. That's a good way to get shot.
Yep.
In a prepared situation, when it's grid down, look what happens to people who loot after a natural disaster. There's assaults and there's people get shot. Don't do that. And not only that, if you say you're a Christian, how you doing on the whole don't steal from your neighbor kind of the thing? Wouldn't it have just been easier to put some food away? to put some supplies away. Instead of put yourself in a situation where you are going to become a criminal, you could be shot, you could be arrested, and you are now part of the problem and not the solution.
Yeah, and there's two ways to look at this thing about people I don't like. One can be big groups, like I don't like people of that race. Maybe, I don't know, that's what they're talking about, which is terrible in and of itself for a lot of obvious reasons. But let's take it down more to the level of individuals. Let's say there's somebody you don't like, your neighbor you don't like, their dog barks, whatever, somebody individually you don't like, and you think, yeah, I'll just take from them. Well, you're right, Shelby, they're going to defend their stuff, number one. But number two, let's say you get away with it, and let's say you take their stuff. What do you think, they're just gonna like be okay with that? You don't think they're gonna come after you on their own? Maybe they lie in wait for you. Maybe they deal with marauders and looters, because you're a marauder and a looter at that point. Just because somebody doesn't like you doesn't entitle you to their stuff. Because if that were true, Antifa would have a right to all of our stuff, and we obviously won't stand for that. Here's what happens. That person you don't like gathers up the neighbors, and they say, hey, there's this guy taking my stuff. We got to do something about it. By the way, person who had their stuff stolen says, and I want my stuff back. Let's go get my stuff, because they're hungry. They want their stuff. And now you've got a group of people. See, you thought you were all clever just getting even with one person. No, no, no. You got the whole neighborhood now coming after you. There's strength in numbers. You just died because you thought that it would be brilliant to just take stuff from people you don't like. So well, dumb on a lot of levels.
Dumb, like basically you just opened a huge can of worms. You became a part of the problem, not the solution. And it's not just a one and done. I'm going to go steal and it's done. No, you've created a huge problem. So we're going to stop right there, and we're going to go on to this next segment, which is listener feedback. And I have a very heart-wrenching letter from one of our fans who sent me a letter, and I asked her if I could share it. And this is because of something I shared on social media about this, and I know we all talk about this, and there's no judgment here. There's no judgment here, but I wrote about how I, on a post recently, about the whole transgender movement and Big Pharma really kind of making some money off of that movement. So a little bit political kind of thing, but everything is politicized these days. That's what's so sad. So here's the heart-wrenching side of that. And I have a message for this young woman at the end and anybody else struggling with this. And again, there's no judgment. This is a hate-free zone, all of that. This is heartbreaking. It says, Dear Glenn and Shelby, I've been a fan for quite some time. I got my husband started on 299 days, and we listen to the podcast on the weekends. We now have frequent conversations about really important stuff like normalcy bias. You would be proud to know that my last dollar store run, I dang near cleared the rack of all the can openers. Good
yes.
on ya.
Good
on
ya.
The reason for my message is this, though. A few days ago, you posted an article on transgender and the mental health industry. This really struck home to me. A few years ago, our daughter moved to Seattle. After that move, we watched her go from being outgoing and happy to sullen and depressed, to the point of being worried about her being in danger for her life. I encouraged her to see a counselor. I couldn't talk her into coming home. And that was probably the biggest mistake I have ever made as a mother. Suddenly, there was all sorts of things that came up. The biggest of them was that she was now considered, quote, non-binary, and was to be referred to as them, they. From there, it just escalated. She actually came home for a bit this last fall for a few months. I thought we would have some time to talk about things, and just about the time we were lightly treading the subject, she decided it was time to go back. Last month, we went to go see her, and my gosh, she didn't even look like my daughter. I was heartbroken, mostly because she just looked lost. Somewhere in there was my baby and the person she's supposed to, and the person she's supposedly seeing for her mental health pulls her further and further away. Anyway, that trip, she told me she wants to have the change. Up until this point, I've tried to handle what she tells me with not so much kid gloves, but trying to feel her out and wait it out. She usually bebops her way back around. This time I just couldn't, and I told her. I told her exactly that. I feel like the person she's seeing encourages the behavior and creates an environment that perpetuates it and enables it to the point of almost a gaslighting situation. She actually confessed that was something that a few of her friends had also said, It's almost the same as an abusive relationship in my eyes. And at this point, my hands are tied. It is absolutely heartbreaking. All I can do is pray for her. And I do constantly. I absolutely hate what that area of the state has encouraged and created. That may not be very Christian of me, but I can't help it. I look at what is done to my daughter and I just hate it. She makes it very clear. I'm saying it how she wrote it. The worst part is worrying about what will happen when SHTF happens. Will she come home? Will she want to come home? Will we be able to get to her? Will she make it since they have put her on all these meds and stabilizers? Will she be able to come off them and actually have some sense of normalcy? Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. As a parent going through this right now, it is awful and heartbreaking. And it was awful and heartbreaking for me to read it. And I turned around and then I read it to Glenn. And then I told Glenn, I said, I want to take this time and talk about this. If you've read my books, especially book one, you know chapter 3 is based on my own experience. And I didn't write anything in the book about the therapy that I personally went through and to recover from that. And you don't ever fully recover from something like that. But what I learned in that therapy, first of all, I am a proponent of therapy. I'm a proponent of faith-based therapy. Keep in mind, people who go to therapy school and get their little licenses and permits and all that and digits and letters after their name, those are schools that have to comply with American Medical Association standards. And we know that there's some leftist, socialist, crazy stuff coming out of that. I recommend a faith-based counselor. And what I learned and all of that, and I come back to this, and this is where my heart is going. So to this young woman living in Seattle, woman, I hope yes. You hear me. And if you know someone like this, who this woman just described, your son, daughter, niece, nephew, grandchild, this message is for you. This is what the God of the universe says about you. The God of the universe, who every morning when I wake up, paints a beautiful sunrise. He has given me beautiful children. He has led me through this life and protected me and guided me. He has created the stars in the universe. And the Bible says he can breathe, boom, and a mountain is created. This earth is created for the life that we leave. And that is a huge task. That is monumental. I can't even picture the kind of power that it takes to be God. And that God has made it very clear in the word that he speaks to us, and his word is the Bible, that he is very intimately and emotionally connected to us. And he wants that relationship. And this is what that God to you, this young woman in Seattle, says about you. According to Isaiah 43:4, he loves you. And he doesn't just love you like a cute little Valentine's card. He loves you. He loves you. You are alive in him, according to Romans 5:11 and 1 John 5:11. You are alive because of him. Every breath you take is because of the things that he says and believes and is created in you. Here's the verse that just nailed it for me back in my dark days. Colossians 1:22 and Colossians 2:6-10. God sees you as holy and blameless, and you completely lack in nothing. He is peace. This angst that you feel to this young woman in Seattle, this angst and this pain and this hurt and this confusion that this crazy person is putting in your head, God says, I am your peace, Romans 5:1. And Psalm 8:4-5 says, God has made me. He thinks about me. He cares for me. He has made me a little lower than himself and crowned me with glory and majesty. He has crowned you. You are a beautiful woman in his eyes. Galatians 3:26, you are a daughter of the King of the universe. Proverbs 31:30, you are God-fearing. You are redeemed. Ephesians 1:6, you are redeemed from the darkness and confusion and crazy, crazy medical stuff coursing through your veins. You are redeemed. You're beautiful. You are not all of the things that this person is saying to you. You are not a binary number. You are so much more than that. You are a once in an eternity creation created by God to be loved by Him, and He loves you. He is reaching out to you. He watches every step you take, and He knows what's on your heart. Your mother and your father love you a fraction of the amount that God can, and they're standing on their doorstep right now wanting to bring you home. Please go home. Please take care of yourself, and please be safe. So, while I collect my thoughts, I'm going to let Glenn start talking now.
Wow. Very heavy, but needs to be said. A couple things. This quote, I don't know where it comes from, but it wasn't me, and that is, God never created an insignificant human being. And the reason I'm getting choked up about that is a little different. I'm not going to change the subject, but Cole, in real life, has some disabilities. And anybody that thinks that he somehow is not worthy because of those disabilities doesn't understand God. And God has never made an insignificant human being. I'm mad. It's interesting, the male and female perspective. You're mad too, but you focus in on what you did, and I'm naturally the warrior, and I'm angry at this horrible, disgusting, filthy culture.
This person that calls himself a therapist and they're trying to help somebody, and what they're doing is causing their demise.
And the industry.
That is Satan.
Yeah.
That is the evilness of this.
Yes, it is pure evil, pure wickedness, selfishness. This counselor, he or she or it or whatever, is making money, lots of money, on turning people into hopeless, chemically messed up, surgically messed up, unhappy people. Think of the toll it's having on these parents. And I don't know that this counselor's like greedy and doing it for money. I don't know, because I don't know. But I'm telling you, that's what's happening. And so this culture, I'll call it the Seattle culture. It's the San Francisco culture, LA,
Chicago, Baltimore, New York.
Yeah, it's all the bad places. Thrives on this kind of stuff and feeds off of it. And I mean that in the sense of extracting money and political power and social standing and all of these things and creating all this misery. And I'm angry and I want it to stop. And
they're stealing the hearts and minds, yes, of our children and a whole generation of young, vibrant, amazing people that have a whole lifetime to do amazing things, and they're just getting sheared off at the knees because of therapists. And this is one therapist, but there are thousands of them, millions of them across the country.
And drug companies and all of the media and popular culture and all these messages people hear. All, especially young people. I have a friend, the real Rich Gentry, the real guy. He told me that when his daughter, who's in public schools, was 8 years old, that his daughter came home and said words to the effect of, yeah, I mean, a lot of girls at my school, you know, say that we should try kissing girls. Girls should be kissing girls. And his daughter said, that seems really wrong. I don't want to do that, and that's all good. This was, you know, 7-8 years ago. I'm sure it's only worse now. I don't think that a lot of adults understand the depths, the horrible, horrible influences that a lot of kids are in right now. And it's everywhere. And it does vary regionally. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to, you know, exaggerate. But in a lot of these communist, that's a word. I meant to use that. Communist places, it's that deep and that serious. And I'm not saying every 8-year-old who goes to a school and hears some kids saying this is going to necessarily adopt this. I'm not I don't need to exaggerate to make my point.
But all it takes is for somebody to just have a weakened moment, feel lost and scared, and go to this therapist. So I want to quit talking about the evilness of this, because I don't like giving Satan and evil more voice than they deserve. I really don't. Here's what I will say to you, to this wonderful woman who sent this letter, and to her daughter and to the daughters and sons out there that are feeling maybe in this situation where you're lost, you don't know what to do. First of all, send us an email. I mean, I'm pretty responsive. Glenn is busy, but send me an email. I'll talk to you. Ask any of our fans who have reached out to me. I have conversations. Great book. It is a children's book. I remember when I read it to you, Glenn, a few years ago. It was touching. It has been on the market for a long time. It's by Max Lucado, awesome Christian author. And it's a children's book with this very uninspiring title, if you ask me. It's called You Are Special. It is an amazing story about how the only opinion of you, to you who are listening to this, the only person's opinion that matters in the whole universe is God's. And God says you are beautiful, you are redeemed, you are His child, your body, the one that you're considering having surgery on, is His temple, and you need to treat it as such because He would want that of you. Please take a moment and read that book. It is inspiring. Read it to your children. Read it to your children who's coming home telling you about these weird sex education sort of things. And remember, it is only what God says about you that matters. He is the one who made the universe. He's the one that created you. He's the one that paints sunrises for you every morning. And He is the one that when you step aside out of all this political crazy culture we live in, He transcends all of that. And in that, I find a lot of comfort. And on that note, I'm going to leave you with the message that we leave you with every week from Benjamin Franklin. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.